Six music.
BBC Radio. Six music documentaries.
I'm in the phone book.
Today's guest is one of the most iconic figures in popular music, and iconic is a phrase that's used far too often, but in this case, it's true. From their early days as part of the CBGB's post-punk club scene in New York in the late 70s, it was obvious that Blondie were a new kind of band. They absorbed influences like Warhol, 50s Americana and 60s girl group pop, with the rough edges of their new wave contemporaries like the Ramones. And fronting the band was Debbie Harry, sounding and looking smarter, cooler and more beautiful and charismatic than any other singer in any other band around. They dominated the charts throughout their career from 1974 till 1982 with a run of brilliant and hugely influential singles that incorporated reggae, early rap and disco, as well as classic pop. She's carved out an impressive solo career, exploring her passions for jazz as well as acting, and this year we'll see her return to the stage with Blondie. I'm more than pleased to welcome Debbie Harry.
When were you first aware of music? Even as a small child, when was the first time you can recall hearing music?
Oh, gee, when I recall, I don't know the first time that I heard it precisely. It must have been as a very tiny infant, because my mother loved opera and used to, you know, have it on the radio all the time. So probably as a tiny little girl, I heard music.
What sort of opera was it?
Classical, you know, grand opera.
What about the first single that you actually owned? Do you remember buying the first...
The first single?
The first single that you actually bought that was yours.
Oh, God. I don't know what it was. And I guess an R&B song. It might have been Fats Domino or something like that.
Come on, baby, and be my guest. Come join the party and meet the rest. Everything's gonna be all right. So be my guest tonight. You queen for days. Everything gonna be alright.
so be my guest tonight.
When did you start thinking that this music that you were hearing was maybe something that you wanted to pursue?
I don't know exactly when. I mean, I guess it was always sort of a dream. I can't say precisely. You know, it sort of grew. You know, I sang in different choirs, and I liked that, but, you know, it wasn't exactly what I wanted to do. I don't know, it just sort of evolved. I started, you know, hanging around more with musicians and going to see bands and stuff like that. So I guess that's what really inspired me, was seeing other musicians playing.
What were the early bands that you used to go and see that you used to like?
Oh. Well, I don't know. It's such a long time ago. None of them are around. Oh, but, oh God, who's the crazy one that I used to like to go see? I listened to jazz early on.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about jazz. That's kind of been a passion you've always had, isn't it?
Yeah. God, the orchestra. What's his name? Sun Ra. Yeah, Sun Ra. We'll be right back.
was your first band like?
My first band?
Yeah.
It was a sort of a folk rock band, but I had a little singing group in grade school. It was called the Fifth Grade Girls Club.
That was the name of the band?
Yeah.
Cool.
Very unique, right?
What sort of things did you cover? What sort of songs?
Oh, we did Platters songs and things like that.
They ask me how I knew my true love was true. Inside cannot be denied. They said someday you'll find all who love are blind. Oh, when hearts on fire.
There was a few bands. There was the Stilettos, which is when you first met Chris Stein, who was playing guitar. What were your first impressions of meeting him?
Oh, I think we were sort of more friends before we sort of became intimate friends, you know. He was a very nice guy, you know, sweet guy.
Because you formed, obviously, like a musical partnership that lasted a long time. Did you realise there was kind of a creative spark there pretty early on?
I don't know if I thought of it like that at all. I think we shared a lot of ideas, and probably that's, you know, sort of, you know, I think that when you're looking for a partnership or a relationship, you want to share, you want to have a comfort zone together and a sort of a mutual understanding and appreciation of things, and I think that that's, you know, sort of where we started off.
What were those early Blondie gigs like? Were they quite chaotic?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I think you said before that it sort of took a while for the band to kind of find its feet. Can you remember what those early shows were like? What kind of a band was it early on? Because, you know, you became such accomplished songwriters and such a very tight band musically.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was simple. I think it was, you know, a three-piece band. So it was very simple. And, you know, we did some cover songs.
What did you cover?
I don't even remember, you know, just Lady Marmalade, you know, I don't know, a great variety of stuff, really. We used to do Ring of Fire, we did Goldfinger, and, you know, we covered a wide variety of things, and, you know, a lot of times we didn't play to very big audiences, you know, we did all kinds of bar gigs and stuff, you know.
Earning your stripes.
As it were.
In terms of the early New York scene, there were so many fantastic bands that came out. Can you remember seeing the Ramones for the first time?
I think so. You know, they used to do something. They used to do like these presentations. They weren't really shows. They would invite people to see them. And Chris knew Tommy, the original drummer. And he said, oh, you coming down and see my band? You know, we're playing it here. We're doing a, I forget what you call them. At this little sound studio, and so we went down and, you know, fell in love. They were great.
Well, if the kids are all hopped up and ready to go, they're ready to go now. They got this stuff on them, they're going to the disco. I'm a rocker, bum bum, I'm a rocker, bum bum, I'm a rocker.
Talking Heads were another band that came out of that scene as well. I mean, very, very different. But kind of, this is one of the things, because a lot of the bands that seem to come out of that CBGB's, that club, that scene, musically very, very different, but kind of got grouped in together.
Yes. Well, that's what it was like. It was very inspirational, you know, that there were so many different styles and distinctions, you know, because you could really go and appreciate somebody, you know, and it just was... You know, it just built this excitement.
What were Talking Heads like to see live back in those days?
Great. I mean, they were just... I think they were, you know... I think it was really based not so much on performance as the music itself. And, you know, the quirky, you know, thing like that. But, you know, there were a lot of interesting performers there. It was Al Suicide and... There was Stiv from the Dead Boys, and then all the guys that were in Television, Richard Hell when he split off, Johnny Thunders, fantastic performers, you know, and, you know, interesting songwriters. So it was kind of, I mean, if you want to look at it as being chaotic, I guess you could, but it really was, you know, you'd always have a good night out if you go in to see any of these bands.
I saw you standing on the corner, you looked so big and fine. I really wanted to go out with you, so when you smiled, I laid my heart on the line.
First Blondie single, which I think was Ex-Offender, is that right?
Yeah, I guess.
What can you remember about that song coming out? Because the first single for a band is always a pretty exciting thing. What can you remember about releasing that record?
Not exactly sure what label that came out on. Was that an instant record or was that private stuff?
I think it was instant.
Yeah, instant. It was, you know, it was great. It was, you know, verification or ratification or whatever. So, I mean, it was a good, you know, starting point, a good launching, you know.
Quite controversial lyrics as well.
Yeah, well, they made us change the... it was called Sex Offender and they said, you can't call it that. But to change it to Ex Offender. So, I think... What happened was is that it became the first X song, the first X used, you know, and there had never been that before.
It was Britain that very much took you to its heart when you came over. Can you remember your first trip to London?
Yeah.
Go on.
It was sort of traumatic, but it was great. You know, I mean, we were opening for Television, actually. We got a great response. Television got a great response, but it was sort of a managerial war going on, and that was sort of made it a little uncomfortable. It wasn't like we're going out as, you know, brothers for the cause, you know. It was a little bit too competitive.
It must have been nice coming to a country that just straight away were like, yes, we get it, we understand you, we love you straight away.
Well, I don't know if that's totally true. I think there was... you know, we had some really terrible reviews first off. You know, I think after that first trip, I stayed in bed for a couple of weeks with the covers over my head from the, you know, some scathing review.
Thank you.
Because in 1978, not only did you release Plastic Letters, but you released Parallel Lines. Firstly, that's two albums in 1 year, which is quite impressive. And secondly, Parallel Lines just turned you into this world-straddlingly enormous band. It's, what is it, six of the singles? Yeah. Six tracks off that record were all singles.
Yeah.
How did that feel, becoming that famous, I suppose?
Terrific. I mean, we actually had paid our dues, and that's what we were working for. And I guess it's a little nerve-wracking and sort of, you know, it starts out to be a little bit confusing. But, you know, that's what you aim for.
Do you remember listening back to Parallel Lines for the first time and thinking, we've done something quite special here, we've done something important, something that's really going to connect with a lot of people?
Not especially. I think, you know, I've always been sort of an optimist about the stuff, and if I like it, I figure somebody else will.
Because the level of fame that the band enjoyed, with kind of you very much at the focus point for it, I mean, it's a staggering amount of attention. Did you start to, I mean, how did it feel? Did you disconnect from reality a little bit? Because it must have been quite difficult.
I don't know if I disconnected with reality, but the reality changed, you know. The reality became something else. So my life was a little less, you know, it was more public. I just had a more public life.
How did the rest of the band deal with it?
How did they deal with it?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I guess we all sort of tried to ride the wave, as it were.
Let's talk about a couple of specific tracks. I want to ask you about Heart of Glass, because that's such a pioneering sounding record in terms of the use of synthesizers, in terms of the whole feel of the track. What can you remember about recording it? Was it very heavily influenced by discos and going out? What was the inspiration behind
that track?
Well, I
think that was the big contest between disco and rock, and I think Chris brought in this little rhythm machine and set up that beginning, you know, that little beat, and just sort of evolved from there, because we had had that song for quite a long time.
Right.
Yeah, we had that song sort of for about 5 years before we actually recorded it. It just worked, you know. I think that was our first album that we made with Mike Chapman, and he had a real desire and flair for making radio pop kind of songs. You know, that was his real specialty, and so I think that helped a lot. He was able to help us sculpt our songs and our musical ideas into compositions that made sense. You know, I think that sometimes we had ideas and we didn't put them together very well, but he was, in a way, it was sort of like going to school with Mike.
Just trust, lost on the heart.
You're listening to The First Time with me, Matt Everett, and my guest, Debbie Harry, and that was Blondie's classic Heart of Glass from 1979.
BBC Radio 6 Music.
This beat
Welcome back. You're listening to The First Time with me, Matt Everett, where we look at the memorable first moments in a musician's life. And today, my guest is Debbie Harry. By their fifth album, Auto American, in 1980, Blondie were a massive international group and had started to absorb and reinterpret more eclectic influences, most famously on the single Rapture, inspired by the nascent hip-hop scene in New York, regarded by many as the first hit song to feature a rap of sorts.
No, not quite, but first one to go into the charts.
Okay.
Reach number one.
Were you absorbing that music scene in New York at the time a lot?
Yeah, I mean, that's how we sort of decided to do it. You know, we'd been to see some great little shows and meet Grandmaster Flash and Funky 4 Plus One More. And, you know, it was just, it seemed like an obvious thing to do. I don't know.
Well, it was an obvious thing to do. It was quite a surprising thing to do. It was quite a groundbreaking thing to do in many ways. You make it sound like it wasn't a big deal. It was a pretty big deal.
It was a big deal.
Always had a solo career kind of running concurrently. with Blondie as well. Your first solo album was 1981. Was that an attempt to kind of step away from your identity as the band? Did you want to kind of reclaim some of yourself, having become this just the face of this band?
Perhaps. I think it was a chance to do something a little bit different musically.
Because you work with Nile Rodgers and Bernie Edwards, incredible producers from Chic. Were you big fans of Chic's work?
Definitely. No, they were terrific, and I think we had met them a couple of times, Chris and I, and, it seemed like a super opportunity, and we did it.
You've spoken in the past about Blondie's predilection for indulgence, I suppose. Was there ever a point when you thought that the band's partying, maybe drug use, was kind of putting the future of the band in doubt? Did it ever become a serious problem?
I think it does, in general, for our bands, and for most young people growing up, there's that urge to party and to experiment and try things. It doesn't really mix well with business in any business. It's just kind of a waste of time. A lot of fun, but, a waste of time, really. Because most people either die or grow out of it. There's very few people that survive and continue taking drugs their entire lives. That's it.
It's not good for creativity either.
That depends. I can't really say no to that. It depends on the person.
When did you decide to split the band up?
It just sort of fell apart. It wasn't a decision, really. Just everything just sort of crumbled, business-wise and personnel-wise.
What do you mean?
I don't know. Just was one of those periods, that everybody got sort of fed up, and management dropped us and record label dropped us, and we were just dealing with a bunch of problems, and that's just what happened. It sort of exploded and imploded simultaneously.
Stars. Next July we collide with Mars.
Well, well did you ever?
What a swell party.
What a swell party.
What a swell again.
That's right.
Now, piss off.
That's good.
I'm going to ask about your cover of Well, Did You Ever with Iggy Pop, which I think is one of your great
That's
recordings.
Oh, fun.
You must have known him from quite a way back.
Mm-hmm. We toured with Iggy and Bowie in 1976, I think it was. And, you know, they were terrific to work with.
It sounded like a very fun track to make.
Oh, yeah, it was. Yes, and he's, you know, he just put the, you know, put it all in there, you know. It was fun.
You worked a lot with the Jazz Passengers. When did you first meet those guys? What was it that kind of drew you towards? Because you virtually became a member. You played with them quite a lot.
Yeah, I did. I was invited by Hal Wilner, who was producing an album for them called Jazz Passengers in Love, to sing a song that they had that they hadn't been able to find anyone to sing. And so I sang it, and that's how it sort of all evolved. Then they did, you know, they presented that album with all the different singers on it, and Mavis Staples, and anyway, there was a whole lineup of different singers, Kelly. So we started, you know, playing live and doing those shows, and little by little.
Who are the key jazz performers for you? Who are the people that you keep coming back to listen to?
I guess Ornette Coleman I like.
Train. Ooh, it makes you wanna die.
In 1998, you reformed Blondie. What was the decision behind that? Because it's been quite a while.
Well, we had an interest from a management company, and Chris also was sort of thinking, well, you know, like if we didn't do it now, we would never get it done. You know, it was sort of, you know, timely to do it. And they convinced me that, you know, we should do it.
Did you take a lot of convincing?
A little bit, yeah.
Why? Were there a lot of issues that needed sorting out?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's always the way it is, you know, with bands. Unless you have terrific management. We always had management problems. And therefore, you know, the band was always sort of on, you know, didn't, everybody was off balance a little bit. You know, there was no place to sort of settle. And so that's, you know, a very important part of it.
And since then, you've had something of a renaissance in your live performances.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's kind of a miracle, really. I wouldn't go that far, but truth, but... No, it's completely satisfying and wonderful. And I think we're doing better now than the original band. I think this band is really terrific, and we've done a lot of new music, and it's great.
I was going to ask you about the new music. There's a record on the way, if I'm not mistaken. How's it sound?
Well, it sounds like a traditional Blondie album in that we cover a lot of different styles of songs. And I can't really say much more than that. We have performed three or four of them live, and they've gone down really well. Huh?
It's called Panic of Girls. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's a strange title. Why that?
Why that? It's a line from one of the songs.
The final thing, what should we play? It could be anything you want. It can be Blondie track, a solo track, something that's inspired you, anything you like. What should we finish on?
Oh, I don't know. God. I think something from the new album I really like. I like Mother a lot, too.
Tell me a little bit about that song.
Mother is about a club that I used to go to, and it closed, and it was sort of a... It had gone on for 10 years, and it was a different kind of club. It wasn't sort of like a normal club. It was a theme club where you would dress up every week in a different kind of theme, and it was nice. It was great. It was a lot of fun, and I used to go there. And when it closed, it was sort of, oh, what do I do now?
There's a place in New York.
Yeah. So, Mother, where are you? Where are you?
So it's not about your mother. It's about a club.
But I mean, it can be interpreted in a lot of different ways. By the way, that is one of my favorite all-time lyrics that I've written. I feel like, wow, I really got succinct and down to the point really quickly and simply. It's really, I like it.
Well, that's the song we'll play and we'll finish on.
Okay.
Thank you very much. It's been good to speak to you.
Thank you.
That was The First Time with me, Matt Everett, and my guest, Debbie Harry. Mother, may I stay all night? Lift your curfew like the light. Colors turned against the cold. I'm looking for someone to hold in your patent leather night. Mother,
BBC Radio 6 Music.
Hello, this is a shorter version of a weekly new music playlist titled Handpicked by 6 Music, one of a big collection of music playlists you can now download and subscribe to in the BBC Sounds app. To find the full version, just search Handpicked and check out some of the other playlists tailored for whatever music you need or mood you're in.
Love the door, the constant buzzing all through the night.